Hey everyone, welcome back to the Sports Podcast. It's your boy Justin Roman. And guys, I hope you guys had a good day. It was sunny but really windy today, but you know, at least it wasn't raining, you know. 'Cause I hate the rain. So, but anyways, guys, I'm here to talk about the Giants. And guys, guys, there was a report by Paul Schwartz. And what Paul Schwartz was talking about is something that the Giants need to really work on. You know, Paul Schwartz, he clearly said that the New York Giants cannot hide their feelings in free agency, you know, and I'm going to agree with him, you know, and here's why. Look, what happens in the next few weeks will indicate more about what the Giants truly think about their offensive line, you know, than any comments made prior to the start of the NFL free agency. This far this offseason, they released Kevin Zeitler, who was their starting right guard the past two seasons, to gain $12 million in badly needed salary cap space and negotiated down the contract with Nate Solder. Their erstwhile starting left tackle to gain even more cap room. Exactly how much has not been revealed, but expected to be way down from the $16.5 million cap hit Solder was scheduled for in 2021. Tomorrow teams can begin talks with unrestricted free agents, the so-called legal tampering period. No deals can be made officially until Wednesday, which is the start of the new league year, but plenty of deals will be agreed to and leaked prior to the official opening of the signing period. The Giants can, of course, forego paying big bucks or even moderate bucks in free agency and wait until the NFL draft in late April to fortify the depth and perhaps add a starting player to their offensive line. Now, if you're going to ask me, Justin, is that a smart course of action? With Andrew Thomas, Shane Lemieux, Nick Gates, and possibly Matt Peart, the Giants already have enough youth along their offensive line, and adding a rookie would only bring down the experience level. So, you know, Dave Gettleman clearly said we all want things to happen fast. You know, just for what it's worth, in terms of where our offensive line is, they're young and they're talented. You know, he also was saying things take time. We believe in these guys. They all came along. We finished the season fairly strong. One of the things that I would say to you is we were 4-2 in our division. And if you look at our division, all those defensive lines that we play, all those fronts are big, powerful, athletic defensive lines. And our guys held up. So we're getting there. It's the old saying, you've got to run the ball. And you've got to obviously be able to protect the passer. We're young and we're getting better, you know. I'm gonna believe Dave Gettleman. Everything Dave Gettleman said was absolutely correct. This offensive line is young, you know, and they did get better, you know. This is the same offensive line that went against the Seattle Seahawks, and they beat them. No team expected the Giants to go in Seattle and win a game like that, you know. So look, the Giants were The Giants were only about $4 million under the salary cap of $182.5 million before the savings for Soldier's restructuring hit the books. You know, they are not likely to be able to afford the top offensive lineman on the market. With Trent Williams, Joe Tooney come to mind, but they might be in play for the next tier players. Riley Reiff has 119 starts the past 8 years, mostly at left tackle, and he could be a right tackle option. Veteran tackles like Alejandro Villanueva and Kelvin Beachum are also available. You know, all I'm saying is this. It will be really interesting to see how the market treats Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz, the two starting tackles for the Chiefs, who both got released last week. Fisher is coming off a torn Achilles tendon in January, and Schwartz had back surgery in February. Would the Giants, now if you ask me, Justin, would the Giants gamble on the health of one of these players on a one-year deal? Look, at Nate Soldier, he's going to turn 33 years old next month, and he will return to compete for a job. It will not be a left tackle where Andrew Thomas, the number 4 overall pick in the 2020 draft, resides. Soldier could swing over to right tackle, a spot he hasn't played since his rookie season back in 2011, and find himself in the competition with Matt Peart for the starting role. Nate Soldier, who opted out last season, could emerge as a backup tackle at both spots. His body was able to heal after a year out of the game. But it remains for me to be seen how much, if anything, he lost while sitting out. So obviously I wouldn't be shocked if the Giants go after offensive linemen. You know, because the offensive line is the biggest weakness we had for the Giants, you know, and probably some other Giants fans, not all of them, but some probably would agree with me. You know, some Giants fans would say that we need a receiver, and I agree with that. I think we do need a receiver. We obviously need an edge rusher, you know. But I believe in Dave Gettleman. You know, I personally believe over the years you could tell by Dave Gettleman's experience, you know. I do believe he will fix this offensive line because he did it with the Carolina Panthers, you know. He's brought the same Carolina Panthers team that we saw last year, and brought them to the Super Bowl and lost. But at least they went to the Super Bowl. So I wouldn't be shocked if Dave Gettleman goes after... I wouldn't be shocked if he goes after Joe Tooney or Alejandro Villanueva. Because Dave Gettleman loves building his offensive lines. And Nate Soldier, maybe... Like I said yesterday, I might give him a chance. Because, like I said, he had a whole year off to get healthy, to get some stuff done. So we'll see what happens. But I still believe. I think he might lose. You know, he's missed out on a lot of stuff. So I think it's best that he doesn't start because the Giants have Rob Sale as their new offensive line coach, and Rob Sale's really. He's really used to coaching young offensive lines, and he's done a hell of a job at it too. So I think we're gonna see a really young offensive line. But I think look at the Giants went 4-2, ending the season, which is pretty good. This is the same offensive line, you know, that beat the Seattle Seahawks. You know? So, don't be shocked. I would not be shocked if Dave Gettleman goes on to addressing this O-line, because he's done it in the past, and I wouldn't be shocked if he does it again. So, let's see what happens. Oh, guys, another thing I want to talk about the Giants is that there was a report today that some people that work inside the Giants building are saying that there some analysts and news reporters are saying that the New York Giants in the New York Giants building like Bud Dupree. Now, if you guys don't know who Bud Dupree is, Bud Dupree plays for the Steelers. This man is probably, in my eyes, he is probably like the second or third best edge rushers in the entire league that you can watch. Look at. When NFL free agency officially begins next week, the Giants will have their eyes on several markets, including wide receiver and edge rusher. You know, this team has desperate needs at both positions and is expected to be active in negotiations. Their primary wide receiver target is Kenny Galladay, but if that falls through, they will turn their attention to the deep pool of edge rushers. And now, guys, the edge rusher market is really talented. You have guys like Shaq Barrett. You have guys like Hassan Reddick. You have guys like Bud Dupree. You know, there's a lot of options. So, but anyways, out of that group, there are some, according to there was a report by ESPN's Jordan Arena, that out of that group, there are some people inside the Giants building who really like Bud Dupree. Now, guys, listen up, because I love Bud Dupree. I love him a lot. You guys know how I'm really big on defense. Bud Dupree is a guy I have my eyes on. I know there are people in the building who like him, you know, because he's a great defender. You know, obviously, I don't know clearly if they're willing to make that offer, you know, and go to that level, because he's coming off a serious knee injury, and there's a risk in that, obviously. Also, he kind of blossomed the past 2 years, whereas the beginning of his career got off to a slow start. How much of that do they determine is the fact that he played alongside TJ Watt? Definitely, something you have to take into consideration. PFF recently listed Bud Dupree as an overrated free agent for precisely that reason. You know, PFF said this about Bud Dupree. They're saying, Dupree is a classic buyer beware candidate at the edge position, an incredibly gifted player capable of making splash plays. He also comes with a first round pedigree and has 22 sacks over his past 27 games. The problem is that he has played in an environment that gives him a lot of layups in terms of pass rushing. Last season, 60.5% of Dupree's total pressures were either unblocked, clean up, or pursue plays, which are more circumstantial than they are evidence of plus play. By contrast, only 26% of TJ Watt's pressures fell into those categories. So yeah, look, at the fact that Dupree suffered an ACL tear in December may also give the Giants pause. That's a very serious injury, you know? And both the recovery and rehab timeline can be unpredictable. Should the Giants opt to pass on Dupree, Jordan Rainan says one name to look out for is Hassan Reddick. You know, and I like Hassan Reddick. You know, Hassan Reddick, to me, is a guy I think they might look into. The price has to be right on that one. So, those to me are really the two who stand out to me for the New York Giants, you know. I think he will end up with the Giants. You know, I wouldn't be shocked. Former New York native. But like I said, there's a lot of options. They're all good, so I don't really care, to be honest. But you gotta also look at, it's like comparing and contrasting. You know, I always talk, when I look at free agency, I think of free agency as comparing and contrasting, you know, because you got to think about the player that you're trying to get. You don't know if that player, the player that you're getting, do you think he's going to stay healthy enough? You know, do you think that he wants to help your team win? You know, those are questions that you need to get. Those are questions that you need answered and answered quickly, you know? So obviously I wouldn't go after Bud Dupree because, like I said, he suffered an ACL tear, you know, and those injuries can come back to you so quickly and in an easy way. So I would rather go after Hassan Redick or Shaq Barrett, you know? So, yeah. Hey guys, another thing I want to talk about, and this is the last thing I'm going to talk about for the Giants, is that, guys, there's a report by my man Ryan Honey, news writer for Elite Sports New York. Ryan Honey reported that the Giants, this is not new to me, it's not new to anyone. You know, the Giants are obviously working on a long-term deal for Leonard Williams. So it looks like the Giants are indeed working to re-sign Leonard Williams after placing the franchise tag on him earlier this month. Leonard Williams will be back on a long-term basis, obviously. At least the Giants hope, you know. According to Ian Rappaport, the Giants are working on a new deal, you know, for a star defensive lineman. Rappaport mentions he doesn't get the feeling the two sides are close to a contract agreement, though. The Giants thus are using the franchise tag designation as a placeholder to eventually come to terms with Williams, who they traded for during the 2019 season. This is understandable and reasonable. The organization didn't want to risk him hitting the free agent market and signing elsewhere, especially after his impressive 2020 campaign. Williams led the Giants with 11.5 sacks, 11.5 sacks, and 30 quarterback hits. A long-term deal needs to come to fruition by July 15th, the deadline for Williams to sign a franchise tag. However, as Rappaport notes, it would be best for a contract to be finalized by this Wednesday, which is the start of the NFL's new league year and the start of the free agency period. Obviously, re-signing him would clear some cap room, something the Giants desperately need more of ahead of the market's opening. You know, as of Sunday, the organization possesses just a little over $3.1 million in space, and it still may attempt to re-sign defensive lineman Dalvin Tomlinson, along with additional free agents, potentially such as a new number one receiver like Kenny Golladay. The price tag for Williams, well, that will be a significant amount, to say the least. The veteran Leonard Williams may be receiving around $20 million annually in a new deal. His franchise tag price will be expensive as well, but it's unclear the exact total. The tag will be 120% of his 2020 salary, which may be either $16.1 million or $17.8 million, depending on the fate of the grievance. Williams filled last year. The former price is the defensive tackle tag, what he received in 2020. And the later price is the defensive end tag, what he believes he deserves, you know. Therefore, the 2021 franchise tag value would either be $19.4 million or $21.4 million, both of which would be notable hits against the cap. Now, re-signing Williams is currently General Manager Dave Gettleman's top priority, and if it's not, it should be. The Giants obviously will need to retain one of their top defensive players in this clear cap space if they even wish to think about acquiring a talented offensive player. So obviously, guys, looks like the Giants are gonna try to keep Leonard Williams long term. So don't be I'm not. I wouldn't be shocked if the Giants would be clearing more roster spots. You know, like I said, guys, the more players you release, the more money you're gonna get. You know, and Leonard Williams, he's gonna be really expensive. So don't be shocked if the Giants release a little bit more players. So yeah. Okay, guys, let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys. Oh my God. So guys, there was a report today, there was a report today by David Hellman, and what he was talking about, he was talking about Dan Quinn's Falcon history, you know, and obviously a lot of you Cowboys fans believe that it will give you an idea of how the Cowboys will build this defense. Listen up. A lot of you Cowboys fans are really optimistic about what Dan Quinn will do in Dallas. All you Cowboys fans think you're going to see the same defense that Dan Quinn made in Seattle when the Legion of Boom was irrelevant, and you think he's going to bring that to Dallas. There is no way in hell that he's going to bring Earl Thomas, there's no way he's going to bring them back. Cam Chancellor, who in my eyes was number one best all line. He will always be number one of all best safeties in the league. Cause Cam Chancellor was no joke, you know. But look it. When Jerry and Stephen Jones talked with the media on Tuesday during the press conference for Dak Prescott's new contract, the junior of the two mentioned the need to beef up the Dallas defense now that their quarterback was locked up. Now, that's been the biggest focus this offseason so far when discussing the Cowboys, who replaced defense coordinator Mike Nolan with Dan Quinn after a historically bad outing on that side of the ball. Obviously, there are question marks at every level of this group. The defensive line has a star, DeMarcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory, who were looking better each week. But depth on edges is a problem, as well as the interior of the line not having any clear top dogs, despite the promising glimpses from both Tristan Hill and Neville Gallimore this past season. Linebackers and Jalen Smith and Leighton Van Der Esch have struggled mightily the last 2 years, albeit in very different ways, but appear to still be in the team's plans. And outside of Trevon Diggs, who I think will be really special for this Cowboys secondary, and Donovan Wilson, this secondary is riddled with uncertainty. So you can ask me, Justin, what might the Cowboys do? Well, look, it's likely that many of their free agent signings will be on this side of the ball. But it's also common knowledge that their approach under Stephen Jones and Will McClay has been to build through the draft first and foremost. To that end, Dallas has had struggles building up the defense. Ever since 2011, the Cowboys have drafted 16 defensive players in the top 100. Just four of them were first round picks. That was Byron Jones, Taco Charlton, Morris Claiborne, and LVE. Two of those are considered major busts. While Byron Jones became a top tier cornerback, he didn't make it to a second contract in Dallas. Leighton Van Der Esch is now entering the final year of his rookie deal, and Dallas has to decide either or not to exercise his fifth-year option. You know, of the remaining 12 players, the only ones still on this team are DeMarcus Lawrence, Randy Gregory, you know, Jalen Smith, Tyrone Crawford, and, of course, the guys drafted in the last 2 years, and Trevon Diggs, Neville Gallimore, and Tristan Hill. Tadobi Awuzie and Jordan Lewis, who were both drafted in 2017, have been productive players at one time or another, but are set to enter free agency and not expected back. So if you can ask me, Justin, can this insistent hit rate for Dallas change under Quinn? Well, look, it's been made fairly clear that much of the Cowboys' strategy when it comes to defensive personnel will be up to the former Falcons head coach. Jerry Jones said as much on Tuesday. Jerry Jones said, quote-unquote, Quinn, in my view, has some great skins on the wall. He's got experience. He is people skilled. When you're around him, you'll see that. He's certainly a dedicated football coach, and he's covered a lot of ground. We have a lot of tape, so to speak, if you were talking about a player. He also said we've got really a lot of information to look at to decide how he fits us. He was absolutely perfect for us in this situation to come in here. He'll be extraordinarily influential in how we put together our personnel on defense. I think he's got that kind of credibility. Listen up. Luckily, the Cowboys have 6 seasons worth of evidence to judge Quinn on. While Dan Quinn's time in Atlanta featured Thomas Dimitroff as the general manager, it was well known that Dan Quinn was heavily involved in personal decisions. So let's look at the defensive players Quinn and his Falcons targeted in each draft and when. In 2015, Quinn's first year in Atlanta, he used his first 2 draft picks on defense, getting edge rusher Vic Beasley and cornerback Jalen Collins. In the 5th round, they landed defensive tackle Grady Jarrett before taking safety Akeem King in the 7th. King was a practice squad player for 2 years before being cut, as is usually the case for those later round picks. But Grady Jarrett has blossomed into one of, in my eyes, as one of the best interior pass rushers in the NFL. Collins flamed out due to multiple suspensions early in his career, while Vic Beasley peaked in his sophomore season with 15.5 sacks, but struggled to build on that success. The next year, Atlanta once again spent their first 2 picks on defense. First was safety Kanu Neal, a popular free agent fit for the who could be a popular free agent fit for the Dallas Cowboys now, and then linebacker Deion Jones. They also used their 4th round pick on linebacker Devondre Campbell. Neal, the Falcons' box safety, got off to a hot start before injuries limited him to just 4 total games between 2018 and 2019. You know, Deion Jones blossomed into one of the most productive off-ball linebackers in the NFL the last few years, leading the Falcons' defense through thick and thin, while Campbell was a highly productive SAM linebacker, you know, who opted to leave after his rookie deal was up. You know, in 2017, Atlanta continued the trend, you know, by spending their first 2 picks on edge rusher Tock McKinley and linebacker Duke Riley. In the 5th round, they also took safety Demonte Kazi. McKinley put up 13 sacks in his first 2 seasons, but fizzled quickly after that. Riley earned a starting job as a rookie, but was traded after the 2018 season because another player, more on him soon, outplayed him. And Kazi became a very productive safety for Atlanta right off the bat, and used his ball hawking skills to snag 7 interceptions in 2018. Speaking of 2018, Atlanta used their first round pick on receiver Calvin Ridley, but made up for it by going defense with their next 2 picks, snagging cornerback Isaiah Oliver and defensive tackle Dedrin Sennett, before also selecting linebacker Foy Olukun. While Oliver and Sennett have yet to carve out significant roles, Olukun supplanted Riley in the starting lineup almost right away. In 2019, Atlanta focused more on offense, but still took cornerback Kendall Sheffield and defensive end John Kaminsky in the 4th round and cornerback Jordan Miller in the 5th round. Miller only stuck around on the practice squad, while Sherfield and Kaminsky filled rotational roles. And finally, in this past year's draft, Quinn's last with the Falcons, they went back to spending their first two picks on defense by snagging cornerback AJ Terrell, coincidentally allowing Dallas to take CeeDee Lamb with the next pick, and defensive tackle Marlon Davidson. They also took linebacker Michael Walker in the fourth round. So this reveals some obvious trends for Quinn in his approach for drafting for defense. In the first round, Quinn prioritizes pass rush and secondary help. In fact, every time his Falcons took a defensive player in the top 50, it was either an edge rusher or defensive back, committing lots of draft capital to those two areas. Additionally, Quinn has been able to find starting caliber linebackers late in the draft. As Jones, you know, who was taken at 51, was the earliest they ever selected at that position. Most notable to Cowboys fans, here is that 2016 draft when Atlanta took a safety 17th overall. The idea of spending an early draft pick on a safety is almost a foreign concept in Dallas, but Quinn has shown that he is willing to prioritize that position in a way the Cowboys haven't in a while. So all I'm saying is this: much of the actual scouting work, both in Atlanta and Dallas, falls to the front office and not Dan Quinn. Yet it's sounding a lot like the newly hired defensive coordinator will have his say on which defenders Dallas drafts this offseason. And based on his record with the Falcons, it's a safe bet to assume Dallas will target pass rushers and defensive backs early and often while finding quality linebackers in the later rounds. So, I don't really know. Let's see if he can still have that same skill of bringing defensive players to the Cowboys, like how he has been doing for the past 20 years, you know, when he's worked with the Seahawks and the Falcons. I'm not sold, but Cowboys fans want to believe it. So let's see what happens. And guys, let's talk about the Philadelphia Eagles. So guys, there's a report that Zach Ertz has grown increasingly impatient with the Eagles. So guys, it looks like the Eagles veteran tight end is looking for resolution. So a week ago today, NFL Network reported that a Zach Ertz trade could happen in the coming days, which it never did. It's almost like the Eagles leaked that out in an attempt to create a false sense of urgency, and teams unpredictably didn't fall for it. All the while, Ertz has grown increasingly impatient with the Eagles for not either trading or releasing him. You know, listen up. Here's what I have to say about this whole situation. The Eagles insist they will not release their three-time Pro Bowl tight end, Zach Ertz. And with multiple teams having shown interest in the trade, some people are saying that Ertz has grown increasingly impatient with the team to get something done. To this point, actually, the price has just been too high for other teams. You know, the Eagles have been looking for a draft pick, something in the third, maybe fourth round range. Zach Ertz is due $8.5 million in the last year of his contract in 2021. It's not an astronomical number, but remember, he's 31 years old. He's coming off an injury. It's hard to get that kind of draft pick compensations. So while the Eagles are insistent they'd be happy to have Ertz on a roster in 2021. Remember, his good friend Carson Wentz already traded to the Colts. It certainly sounds like Ertz is eager for a fresh start here. No, so obviously, look, there's nothing wrong with aiming high in negotiations, but the Eagles just aren't going to get a third pick or fourth round pick in return for Zach Ertz when teams suspect Philly will cut him. Zach Ertz clearly wants to move on, and the Eagles stand to benefit from clearing $4.95 million in cap space with his departure. It's pretty hard to imagine a scenario when Ertz plays for the Eagles in 2021. That ship has seemingly sailed. So it feels like it's just a matter of time before the Eagles come to terms with as much and release him. Maybe they managed to surprise and trade him for, say, a fifth round pick, but that feels pretty optimistic at this point. Best case scenario outcome. So, I don't know. Like I said before, this Eagles team could end up rebuilding, and when you rebuild, you're gonna get rid of everything. You know, rebuilding's like, you know, like how you tear down a building, you know, and something bad happened, you have to restart. You know, you have to start from scratch. You know, you have to find that piece, that missing piece. Because if that, and it doesn't really matter if you find it, you're gonna have to redo the whole building. So that's just like the Eagles. I think the Eagles are gonna end up starting from scratch. I think they're gonna rebuild, not just in free agency, but in the draft. You know, I know this because I went through the same thing as a Giants fan. So let's see what happens. So I hope you guys like this podcast. I will be doing another one tomorrow. I will be giving you guys some live updates on free agency. And yeah, you guys have a good rest of your night.